We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good drop kick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown. Welcome. I am your host, JP John Posh, from the Two Man Power Trip. And of course, joining me is the greatest booker, one of the greatest bookers and minds ever in the history of the business, the games master, the taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing excellent. How about you, my man?
Not too bad. Can't complain. Can't complain at all. What do you think? Just, I know we were talking about this last week too, but what do you think about maybe Rock? I don't know, not usurping, but kind of going above Roman here as like the top heel. Is that a problem or is that not true? Or what do you think about that?
How could it not happen?
Oh,
how could it not happen?
True. He's the Rock. Yeah. The one of the greatest of all time. Is that a thing you have to do for booking to kind of prevent that?
Well, no. How could nothing could prevent it? The Rock is the most recognizable person on the planet right now, I think.
But it feels like even when he's a heel, he's the top dog. You know what I mean? He kind of makes everybody else look lesser than.
Let's go back to Hulk Hogan. Yep. Steve Austin. When you're the top guy, you're the top guy. But no one's ever done what The Rock has done in the history of pro wrestling. I mean, he's mainstream, not just wrestling, movies, on television shows, owns a football league. How could he not? And people don't actually boo him. They're booing him as that character, but they're cheering for him also, right?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely seems that way.
Yeah, so how could anybody overcome what he got? I mean, he is the man. There's no question about it.
Do you think that he does make Roman like look like lesser than? Like, does it make Roman look like it should be Rock versus Cody instead? Is that what it's kind of looking like to you, or no?
Well, I think that match is going to happen after Roman somewhere down the line. They've built this thing. If people knock it because of that, they're out of their minds. They drew the most money they have had last Raw since 2019.
Yeah.
Biggest
crowd in Chicago. Yeah, biggest crowd in Chicago in like 10 years. Yep.
Yeah, biggest crowd they've ever had since 2019 for a Raw.
Yep.
How can you not think that they're going to do a magnificent 2 days, and then they have that Rock versus Cody in their back pocket if The Rock doesn't turn babyface? That's the problem they might have, is if The Rock turns babyface in that match. If Roman and people, you know, and you're saying that Roman is overshadowed by The Rock, right? How do you think Cody will do?
Right. Feel like Roman's above Cody, yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, it's a great, with all the ratings and the houses and the biggest show since 2019, I sometimes think wrestling fans overlook things. This is probably the best the business has ever been.
Even more so than Attitude. Even more so than Hogan era or Attitude era?
Absolutely. There's much more to do. And look at what they were up against. What's her name? Caitlin? The basketball player?
Oh, from Iowa? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had the biggest audience of all times for women basketball. I mean, there's so much more to do. So many more streaming stations. When Hogan was doing it, there was a few, there was no streaming stations. I mean, they're doing by far exceeding the competition compared to, not taking anything away from the Attitude Era, is one of the greatest of all times, but they didn't have the competition that they're going against.
Now, as far as WrestleMania, obviously that's big. Do you think The Rock, with this rumor that he won't be back until August, do you think that's true? Or do you think maybe he could film vignettes and still show up once in a while in between filming? Because I guess he's filming between April and August. Do you think he could still be a part of SummerSlam?
I'm sure he could be part of it, but I would think he's smart enough not to overexpose himself.
So, as far as today and the topic at hand, wanted to talk about Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig. And obviously you have a bit of history with him, but just going all the way back, I know you obviously WWE worked together, but going all the way back, do you remember the first time you met Kurt?
I met him in Baltimore when he first came in. Other than that, I never met him, but we had mutual friends.
Did you know Larry the Axe Hennig at all?
Yeah, I met him one time. He came to Florida for a shot.
So yeah. What did you think of Hennig when you kind of first laid eyes on him and you first saw him?
Oh, I thought he's fabulous. Fabulous. I mean, a great performer, great bum taker. I mean, I think he emulated Ray Stevens with the bumps because Ray was up in Minnesota for a long time.
When you look at Larry versus him, though, right? I mean, much different as far as wrestling looks, just a lot different than his dad.
Right, right. But go back to what? Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think that's good, though, in some cases? So it's not like he's like a clone or going to be the same guy as his dad as far as wrestling.
Let's go back to Blackjack Mulligan and Barry Windham. Completely different back in the day. So, yeah, I think it separated him following in his dad's footsteps and shadow, just like Barry.
Yep. The crazy thing is, okay, he's basically lifelong childhood friends with Rick Rude, who got into the business. And obviously his dad is the one that got him into the business. But that Robbinsdale, Minnesota area is crazy, right? I mean, it's like you can't not become a pro wrestler if you're from that area. It's crazy.
Well, it's like the Tampa area. You know, Kern, Mike, Paul Orndorff, Hulk Hogan, David Sierra, Brian Blair, Joe Gomez. I mean, there's hundreds just like Robbinsdale.
So you had Hennig, Rude, I think Brady Boone, Nikita Koloff, John Nord, Scott Norton, Barry Darso, Tommy Zink, Road Warrior Hawk, and I think Animal from somewhere not too far away from the area. But, I mean, it's a ton of guys in that area. Right. Robbinsdale is nuts.
Right, right.
Do you think if your dad's a wrestler, like, he's got to be a wrestler, meaning that Hennig was, like, destined to be a wrestler and destined to be in the business?
No, I don't think the majority of wrestlers' father was in the business. It's more prevalent now than it's ever been. But back in the day, it was very rare to see a father and son. I mean, the Guerreros were different. But when I was in Florida, there was Mike Graham and there was Barry Windham. I don't remember in Kendall Windham, and I don't remember anybody else's father. Vern, it seemed to me that the sons came in when the fathers became promoters.
Greg Gagne, Vern Gagne. Well, the Funks, obviously, you know, as well.
Yeah.
So looking at Kurt, obviously he's a completely different athlete. His dad was like big, burly, muscular, just kind of more of like a mountain man kind of guy. And Kurt was athletic as hell, a bit skinnier back then, of course, but just he just could move like no other. He had an athleticism that definitely kind of overtook his dad's, in my view. Like just looking at them, it's like, wow, man, he moves like a cat. And he's 6'4", but he moves like a cat.
I don't think he's 6'4".
No, you don't think he was that tall?
No.
How tall do you think he was? 6'3"? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He always seemed a bit taller to me. So.
No. But he was a great athlete, without question. Yeah.
Starts off in AWA, obviously, because that's where his dad was a star and kind of, you know, bringing him into the business. Do you think nepotism could work against you in the business? I know we've talked about that before with, like, maybe Greg Gagne or a few different guys, but do you think nepotism can work against you in the business?
Well, it gives you a start, a leg up on a start, but you have to have talent. You know what I mean? There's been plenty of guys that were sons that tried to follow their father's footsteps that didn't make it.
When you look at Hennig, he does actually go, and maybe people have forgotten or maybe people didn't realize, he does go to WWF basically between 81 and 83, kind of on and off, and he's not really used right. I mean, they'll bring him in as, you know, maybe getting wins over Johnny Rodgers, something like that. But he's basically used as an enhancement guy, so to speak, because he's losing to Greg Valentine and Killer Khan and different guys like that. Do you think that's a good idea to head up to the North in WWF, who's, you know, possibly the biggest territory, and go there and do jobs? Do you get the experience, or do you think that can work against you?
I don't think it hurt him at all. I think it is how they're worked into a program after they've been involved in these so-called enhancement matches and then doing jobs. I don't think it's going to hurt him to do a job for Killer Khan or Greg Valentine, who were wrestling the champs. And, you know, Khan, the giant, broke the giant's leg. So he's losing the very, very high guys on the card.
One of those things where they're bringing him in, but they have no purpose for him. You know what I mean? Like, is it just to get reps you go there for? Is it just to get noticed? No, is it get the experience?
It's to get into the magazines. It's get to be let the people see him, that he's young, he's athletic. The magazines are going to give him a push because they've been told to give him a push. Yeah, and then he goes to Portland and learns his craft.
Exactly. He goes to the Pacific Northwest over with Don Owen in Portland and really kind of honed his skills. His dad obviously goes over there with him as well. They actually do win the PNW tag team titles together over there, which is pretty cool to do that and obviously win a title and wrestle with your dad. What was it about the Pacific Northwest that can get you kind of ready or get you in gear or get you more tuned up and get you a good experience?
Piper was there. Snooker was there. Paul, the heavyset guy, the blonde, he did the one-arm push-ups.
Buddy Rose, Playboy,
yeah,
Buddy Rose.
Yeah, wasn't he Paul Pershman at one time? I forget. But anyway, yeah. they brought in Morocco. I mean, King Curtis was there. They just was very, very easy territory to work. The trips were short, and you made pretty good money.
Paul Pershman, that, by the way, is his real name. So that's probably why you know him as Paul Pershman. Yeah. One of those things with PNW, though, which stinks, it's what happened to that library, that tape library? I feel like it's not really out there. It's been, like, deleted, or they taped over, or what happened to the tape library out there?
I think they taped over it. Supposedly, Buddy Rhodes had a copy of every show.
Yeah, that's how a lot of people had, like, taped or had some stuff, was from him.
Yeah.
Crazy what it'd be worth now, just because, hey, you get to see Piper. Hey, you get to see Hennig. You know what I mean? You get to see all these guys.
Right.
So Hennig is pretty much, you know, learning his craft, but he is wrestling, like you said, in PNW. He is going to Memphis a little bit. He is going to Central States. He is going to New Japan Pro Wrestling. So he's learning his craft. He's getting better. When he comes back, basically, I guess you could say 83-ish, and he heads back to AWA, he's still doing all the other territories and stuff. But, I mean, he's really starting to make his own. And then as you start getting further into the 80s and go into 1987, I feel like he really kind of breaks out. He becomes the AWA world champion at Super Clash 2. He defeated Nick Bockwinkel. Do you think – I know obviously there's still a lot of controversy with that match and what happened there. But as far as him and being put on the map and being champion for, you know, well over a year for the AWA, do you think that's how he really, you know – got his name from being the AWA champion for a while?
No. The AWA was slumping at the time badly. I think he got his name because he was such a great worker. He had great matches every night, no matter where he went. You know, go ahead.
Do you think that counts as a world championship in the 80s, the AWA? Because, you know, some people say, oh, it doesn't count as a world title. Does that count as the world title?
It counts as the most prestigious title you can have in that territory. I mean, yeah, it was recognized as a world title by a lot of states. So, yeah, I guess it was.
With him winning, obviously, he's a babyface going into the match. He defeats Bockwinkel kind of with some help from Zbyszko and some heel work there, and turns villain, you know, or turns heel, excuse me, you know, in the match, and kind of just turns there, and then basically holds the title for over a year. I feel like that really helps him, and obviously he gets a lot of experience, and he would feud with, you know, Greg and Vern Gagne and different things like that, and Bockwinkel. Do you think that that's where he get on Vince's radar, though? And not necessarily, oh, he's making a big name for himself, he's feuding with this guy, but is that kind of where you get on Vince's radar? It's like, okay, this guy's the champion of that company, I'm going to keep my eye on this guy.
No, he was such a great worker. And they liked him when he was coming to New York, and then out of New York, they wouldn't have him back. As you were saying earlier, he'd come in, then leave, come in. They wouldn't have done that if they didn't have plans for him for later. Did it help that he won the title? It certainly didn't hurt.
I always felt like with AWA, though, Vince definitely had his eyes on some of those guys. Obviously, Hogan, Mean, although he was in WWF before, but Hogan, Mean Gene, Bobby Heenan, The Rockers, you know what I mean? A lot of guys come from AWA.
Not Dr. Death, Dr. Schultz, David Schultz. Yeah.
Yep. Right? Yeah, so, I mean, he definitely was keeping an eye on AWA. He tried to buy AWA at 1.2 and Vern turned him down.
Right. And that's when Vince said he didn't negotiate when he got in the car and left. So,
yep.
Yeah.
When he's in AWA, also just interesting to note, there was a diamond exchange. And this is obviously Diamond Dallas Page when he managed Medusa and Bad Company. And Kurt Hennig joins up with the diamond exchange. Kind of your first foray into DDP there, you know, really becoming something in the AWA.
Right.
So he has a lot of connection to a lot of guys, even kind of before he became Diamond Dallas Page as we know him. Obviously with Scott Hall at one point, with Kurt Hennig. So it's always interesting to kind of go back and look, be like, wow, DDP is, you know, he's been in the business for a while. Even if he was a manager back in the 80s, he's got a lot of ties to the big names.
Right.
So he loses the title to Jerry the King Lawler on May 8th, 1988. Kind of a, I guess you could say, AWA house show, if you will, but it's really more of a CWA Memphis show because it's in Memphis, Tennessee. When that happens, obviously, he wants to kind of move on. He wants to head over to WWF. He loses the title to Lawler. Do you remember Lawler versus Perfect at all? Do you remember that match? Do you remember ever seeing or ever hearing anything about it?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it on YouTube. Yeah.
Do you think that that's basically kind of like, okay, AWA is dying out here. We have to team up, obviously, with a little bit of World Class, with Memphis. Do you think that was kind of Perfect leaving? Meaning, like, is that like the death knell to AWA or no?
No. First of all, Jerry Jarrett tried to get the NWA board to make Lawler champion. This is going to shock you. You know, one of the first reasons why they didn't do it?
No.
His outfit.
Really? Why? What's wrong with his outfit?
Well, think about it. Name me one champion that wrestled in long tights in a singlet.
Oh, they were going that specific. Wow, interesting. Yeah, true.
Well, I'll give you an example. You know why when it came to Terry against Holly, when the vote came, it was very close? Do you know why it went to Terry?
No.
Terry was a college graduate, and he didn't have a tattoo. Think about that.
Man, they were wacky back then. Yeah, that is weird.
No, they weren't wacky. They weren't wacky. You see, like you said that. Now, people don't understand. The generation in the 60s, if you had a tattoo, you were either a sailor or kind of run afoul of the law. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a whole different generation. It's like people say, well, how did they get away with the racist language is in jokes. Come back, go back and watch shows from the 70s. They were saying homophobic jokes, racial jokes. It's for the era that you're born or raised that we've taken a major jump that, you know, you can't offend anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
So, different day and age back then, yep.
Yeah. Can you imagine no tattoos? That would be a big deal for everybody's got a tattoo now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep.
Yeah.
So what was the other reason they didn't want Lawler to be champion?
Well, that was the main reason. That it never got past that.
Wow, they
respected Jerry as a performer.
Yeah, and obviously he's a good draw.
And might have been going way back and then up to Lawler. The only guy that was not a shooter or a hooker or a semi-shooter was Buddy Rogers. But Buddy Rogers was an amateur wrestling champion also.
Yep.
So I don't think Jerry had that background.
It's so interesting, though, with Lawler, because he obviously he's going to beat, you know, Hennig here is going to be AWA champion. Then they kind of leave. The Memphis breaks away from the AWA, then Zbyszko becomes champion. And then obviously Mr. Saito and then Zbyszko again, and then there's no more AWA. But it was almost like Hennig left at the perfect time because AWA definitely was dying off at that point. They were desperately trying to stay alive. And when he goes to the WWF and he signs up with Vince, they give him an awesome gimmick. He's Mr. Perfect, right? I mean, just he perfect timing of going there in 1988.
Yeah, and he was a smart guy. It's the second generation. He saw the writing on the wall for the AWA.
Do you love the Mr. Perfect gimmick, the undefeated streak? He does everything perfect. Does that fit him very well? Because it just seems like that, man, this is a great gimmick for him.
Absolutely. He was a great athlete.
Do you consider one of the greatest gimmicks of all time?
Probably. For that era. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But the theme song, the towel, the gum, you know, everything. Yeah.
It goes back to a different era. We talked about this a few weeks ago. The interviews now are very, very like The Rock and Punk and that interview that they did with the three of them. Years ago, there would have been a three-way pull apart, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now they're just talking. It's very UFC-ish. They're going to we're into a complete change of the business right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now with Perfect, he becomes when he first starts Kurt Hennig, but he becomes Mr. Perfect. He then adds in the singlet, like I said, he adds in the towel and the gum slap and. Just and the name and the theme song is awesome. But the greatest thing about that is, I think, the vignettes. Remember, he bowled the perfect 300.
Yeah. The bowling and the basketball, golf. They were great. But here's something. I don't think Kurt should have ever had a single. It didn't show his body as well as he was built like a Greek god. I didn't like that.
Yeah, I know you just mentioned that before. You don't like the singlet.
No, not on him. It didn't show his chest, his abs. He was in great shape.
And you think that hurt him, though, as far as he could have went further with the regular tights, or does that not matter?
I think the perception, if I saw it that way, maybe other wrestling fans saw it that way. Go back to this. Did Hogan have a singlet?
No.
Did Randy?
No.
I mean, it didn't come along. Heartbreak Kid, Austin, Rock? No. It didn't come along until Kevin Nash.
Right? Yeah, and he had the pants with it, yep.
Yeah.
So he bowls 300. He plays NBA basketball, which is awesome. He plays hockey with Mike Modano. The basketball was with Felton Spencer. He does that awesome thing at football, which every fantasy football league or every season always starts off with people posting, hey, fantasy football, like, you know, him passing the ball to himself and Steve Jordan going, that was perfect, which is awesome. Wade Boggs in baseball is saying, wow, that was perfect. They just did such a great mashup of real sports and real athletes and these really famous guys, icons, really, and then – some of them, and then him being able to do that sport just like them. It was perfect. It was great back then.
Yeah, and Henning used to fish with Wade Boggs. I actually fished with Kirby Puckett while he was fishing with Wade Boggs on a charity thing in the Keys. I fished with Kirby Puckett twice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Boggs seems like he was a big fan, too. I know he was good friends with Kurt, but he seems like a big wrestling fan.
Well, he grew up in Tampa. How could he not be?
And he was, for some reason, there was a great picture of him backstage at WCW. All the members of the Flock in gimmick, and it's him with them. with Raven and the Flock. Just so funny. It's like, wow, he really is a fan. He, you know, obviously, go went to the show to see Kurt, but man, he really is a fan.
Oh, he was a huge fan. Yeah.
Do you think, though, when this Mr. Perfect gimmick is coming, like, basically, he's Mr. Perfect. He doesn't lose. That's the thing. Like, he'll win Survivor Series. You know, he'll win at SummerSlam. He'll beat, you know, Ronnie Garvin and the Blue Blazer, Red Rooster. He'll beat Blue Blazer at WrestleMania 5. Do you think that it could work against you, though? Because if you're Mr. Perfect, you can't lose. Is there a possibility that that can work against you?
Yes.
How so?
Well, if you... Okay. You know how I always weave sister sport boxing into wrestling, right?
Yep.
Ali, did he go undefeated?
Nope.
Tyson? Nope. Holyfield?
Nope, no. None of them.
None of them.
Just Mayfield, Mayweather.
Yeah. And he wasn't a heavyweight.
No, no.
The only one that went undefeated because he got out was Rocky. And he had some questionable decisions against Roland Lestanza and somebody else, I can't remember. And, you know, he knew that his days were numbered. He wanted to retire undefeated.
And Mayweather, some of them are a little controversial, too, like De La Hoya fight, he probably lost. I mean, there's a couple of them he probably lost,
And going back to Ali, I mean, Norton could have won the three fights that were that close. You remember?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Definitely. Even I think the last one, I think he lost, really. But, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it was a split decision on the two he won.
So you think that sometimes, Mr. Perfect, you gotta lose this undefeated streak. You know, it's gonna have to come to an end, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It should have happened with somebody that was out of the blue, so he could bitch about it.
Right.
He could have made a big deal out of that, like a 1-2-3 kid, like Hall did.
The thing is with Mr. Perfect, he's awesome, right? He's beating all these guys, doing all those things. It seems like everything, especially because at the Royal Rumble 1990, him and Hogan are the last two guys, and Hogan throws him out. So it seems like almost destined to be Hogan Perfect. Have you heard this, or have you seen this rumor where it seemed like that was almost possibly going to be the WrestleMania 6 main event or possibly be a Big Show main event between those two?
Absolutely. I mean, they didn't come up with that finish without them thinking that's where they were going.
Why didn't it happen? What's the story?
I have no idea. Maybe Hulk wasn't sure about Kurt. I don't know. I don't know what their background was in AWA.
Do you think that he was thinking, oh, he's a little bit smaller? Even though he's not small compared to Hulk, like he's a little bit smaller. Is it believable that I'm going to lose to this guy? Because you know Hulk, how he could be.
Yeah, it could have been that. Because Hulk was fighting monsters at the time. It could have been that he didn't want to vary from what was working.
And I asked J.J. Dillon about this, too, because I was like, oh, it seemed like, you know, at the time you guys were kind of, obviously he worked behind the scenes, it seemed like you guys were kind of going in that direction. He was saying they kind of used some of the house shows that they worked together as like a barometer, and maybe it didn't, they sold well, but they didn't sell like crazy where people were clamoring to see it. So they were like, okay, maybe Perfect isn't the main event guy for WrestleMania against Hogan, you know, this coming year, 1990.
Right. That was, well, if it came from JJ, I think it was a pretty good source telling you the truth.
Now, he's undefeated, right? But he does lose an MSG to the Warrior on March 19th, 1990. He does, at WrestleMania 6, shockingly lose to Brutus Beefcake. That's his, like, first official loss. Is that crazy or what?
Yes.
What was going on here?
I think that was a Hulk influence, don't you?
Seems like it, but it just seems like, wow, he's undefeated. Basically, the Genius beat Hogan via countdown on Saturday Night's Main Event before that with Perfect's help, and then they destroy Hogan's belt. You know what I mean? They destroy it. They just break apart the world title. So it's like, wow, Perfect's getting this great push, and then it leads to him versus Beefcake? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, strange.
Absolutely.
And that's Beefcake getting a win.
That's why this bloodline is so good. Everything makes sense.
Yeah, Beefcake beating him. Yeah, beating him for the undefeated streak is like, what? Yeah, nuts.
Yeah.
I know we both love Beefcake, but I mean, come on here. This is crazy.
Yeah.
So basically, he beats him WrestleMania 6, then Saturday night's main event. Hogan then finally, April 28th, finally wrestles Perfect and he beats him. But obviously Hogan had already lost the title to Warrior, but that kind of nips the Hogan Perfect thing in the butt. Hogan finally beats him on TV. So it's one of those things, it's weird. It's almost like backwards. Perfect should have beat Beefcake at WrestleMania and then Hogan can beat him.
Yeah.
And give him his first loss.
Right. They didn't see it that way. I mean, and that was probably what JJ was saying. The barometer was those house shows that they didn't sell out.
Or it wasn't getting enough attention.
And the people at that time were educated for Hogan and Russell Monsters.
So they decide to do something different and go a different way, and it's Hogan versus Warrior WrestleMania 6, title for title, you know, big babyface versus big babyface. The worlds are colliding there. So they definitely made it into a gigantic main event, but just without Perfect involved. So interesting. I wonder if, do you think he had any heat there losing the Beefcake? That's got to like kind of run through your mind a little bit too. Like, what's going on losing a Beefcake here?
No, I don't think so. I think that was nepotism.
He then wins a tournament because Warrior wins the title. His IC title gets vacated because he's both champs, can't be both champs. So instead of losing it or whatever, they just vacated. He beats Tito Santana in the finals of the tournament, and he becomes Intercontinental Champion. So he's not getting de-pushed by any stretch of imagination. This is back when the Intercontinental title meant a lot, right? I mean, it was an important title back in 1990.
Very important. Very important. And they usually give it to the best worker.
Absolutely.
Right?
The workers' title. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The workhorse's title.
Now, Beefcake obviously will not be wrestling at SummerSlam due to that horrific accident with the parasailing. So Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, is now in the WWF, and he starts feuding with Mr. Perfect. He actually beats Perfect in a great match, wins the title at SummerSlam. And then, of course, Mr. Perfect has to win the Intercontinental Championship back. So he's a two-time Intercontinental Champion. But, man, that's that interesting. So could they have had Beefcake beat him again at SummerSlam, too? It seemed like they were going that way if Tornado beat Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam. Seemed like oddly going that direction.
Might have, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? crazy. Tex Tornado and Perfect were great. Great feud. Perfect always had great matches, especially WWF. Like, randomly on MSG, he'll fight Piper and have one of Piper's best matches. I mean, he could wrestle with anybody and just really be, like, perfect, like the name says.
He was a great technician. Great performer.
Great match at WrestleMania 7, kind of under the radar match against Big Boss Man. He then, you know, has a bunch of different feuds, but let's fast forward to SummerSlam 91. Instant classic. He's got supposedly a tailbone issue, bulging disc in his back. He's got all these issues, and him and Bret Hart at MSG SummerSlam 91 give one of the most memorable matches in SummerSlam history, one of the best matches in WWF history. Just unbelievable match.
Right, right. Well, there are two great technicians in the ring at the same time.
Kind of worry, though, with injuries and stuff, right? I mean, what are they doing to be able to wrestle, even though he has a tailbone issue and bulging disc? It's like, what are they taking? What are they doing to be able to wrestle and kind of grit through the pain?
Well, he's from the old school. You have to work through injuries. Whatever you took to get to the ring, you took.
He, of course, then after the injury, becomes Ric Flair's executive assistant or his executive consultant, the Mr. Perfect. So it was one of those things where he would still be on TV, still play a role as a heel, but he'd be aligned with Flair here as his executive consultant.
Right, right.
So they do a lot of different things with him, teasing that he may be involved with the Macho Man Liz storyline, the Ultimate Warrior storyline, obviously all surrounding Savage versus Flair for the most part. Then he turns babyface and then starts feuding with Flair. So Survivor Series 92, after being with Flair, it's him and Macho against Razor Ramon and Ric Flair in a great tag team match. So he was definitely one of those guys where he could fill in a spot if necessary. He could wrestle injured, but he could also play a babyface and a heel.
He was the ultimate performer.
I love that, where Heenan basically is kind of like ripping him apart and then Perfect just snaps on him, which, boom. I mean, once he snaps, he immediately turns babyface. I mean, he immediately gets the crowd behind him, and then he replaces Warrior, who was originally supposed to be in the tag match, so then it becomes Savage and Hennig. Survivor Series 92.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I just was definitely a big Perfect fan. I thought he was great. I kind of like him better as a heel, though, for the most part. But it was cool to see him as the babyface there. They actually do win that match by disqualification. So good match there at Survivor Series, but they only win by DQ, which then sets up the further angle. Royal Rumble, him and Flair get into it. He eliminates him. Then they have the Loser Leaves Town match where he beats Flair and sends Flair back to WCW as well. So it's not like he's the main event, but it's not like he's nowhere near the bottom of the card. I mean, he's upper mid card for sure.
By sure. Lower top of the card, we'll say.
It's interesting. So King of the Ring 93 happens, right? He has an awesome match. After losing Lex Luger WrestleMania, he's an awesome match at King of the Ring with Bret Hart. I mean, they, again, just tear the house down, have an awesome match. So when you look at Perfect, it's like, okay, what's he doing? He's feuding with Bret. Bret gets the win. He's going to end up feuding with Shawn Michaels. Michaels is kind of going to get the best of him in that feud. Do you like him being used in that role? Do you think in 1993 he's still in his prime? Like, he could still be a like main eventer, world champion level?
Yeah, and when you're writing something and you're saying, who can wrestle Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, the first thing that pops in your head is Perfect. You know you're going to have an incredible match. Yeah.
And the thing is here, so he's kind of got the injury happening. Obviously, he's got the bad back, got the knee injury. I mean, things are happening. He's starting to slow down a bit on his career. He's, like I said, losing to Michaels. He's going to guest referee at WrestleMania 10 for Luger and for Yoko. He's going to guest referee years later in a world title match between Michaels and Bulldog. He's going to become an announcer. He is going to kind of become Triple H's manager for a little bit. Do you like him in this, like, non-wrestling role? I mean, do you think that...
Absolutely. When he couldn't wrestle, he had signed up Lloyd's of London, right?
That is another thing I was going to bring up. So Don't know how hurt. I know he definitely had injury, but how legit were the injuries, and how much did Lloyds of London really kind of play into him not wrestling?
Well, he couldn't wrestle, so I mean, I don't know how legit it was, but he had to pass some kind of physical from Lloyds of London, so it showed up that he was injured.
Man, it just seems like they could have done more with Perfect towards the end, but obviously Lloyds of London and the injuries kind of caught up with him. Great to see him on TV. I just felt like, man, there was more potential there in WWF to do more with him. Maybe not world champion, but, man, he's one of those guys you list on your list of, like, one of the best wrestlers not to win the WWF world title.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So when you
Kern
guys...
was one... What? Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. You're going to say Steve Kern was one?
No. I was going to say that Kurt was one of the greatest performers I ever saw.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
When you guys get the chance to sign him, basically he's going to show up in 97, and, you know, he's not Mr. Perfect. Obviously, WWF owns the name. He's Kurt Hennig, but everyone knows who it is. Who's the one that signs him? Is that Bischoff? Is that you? I mean, who's pushing for Kurt?
Eric. That was... He did all the signings.
Do you think it's too many top guys, though? Like, oh, now we're going to get Kurt. Then you guys are going to get Raven. Like, you think you guys are signing too many guys?
No. Talent rises to the top. It's competition.
Now, he debuts, and obviously the first big match, Bash makes a surprise appearance, and he's one of the mystery guys. It's Bash to the Beach, and it's DDP and his mystery partner, which is Kurt Hennig, versus Randy Savage and Scott Hall. Hennig, of course, ends up turning on him and costing him the match. And obviously, Hennig and DDP have a feud there, and it basically, you know, builds up from there. But do you think that he should have stayed a babyface, or do you like him immediately turning heel? Because obviously, you're the booker at this point.
Yeah, I love him turning heel. That's what his most of his run in WWF was at the time.
What was the ceiling for him? Like, what were you thinking for him at this point? Because he does beat DDP at Road Wild, and DDP was getting pretty over in 97. But what's the thought process in your head? Like, where do you want to see him going?
With that ability and talent, we wanted him right at the top. Maybe not against Hogan, but we were running two or three towns a night. He could have main evented one of those shows.
He's a lot bigger at this point. I mean, he's looking huge. It looks awesome. He looks in great shape. Do you think that he might have been taking some enhancements at this point? He was looking jacked.
I think everybody was back then.
So the NWO's kind of around the corner, maybe trying to recruit him. The Four Horsemen is really trying to recruit him, and he basically takes the spot of Arn Anderson on Nitro. He becomes a Four Horseman. Do you love, obviously he says it would be a privilege, and when they make fun of him the week later, he says it would be an honor, which is just a funny line that they were saying. And then Hennig ends up turning and joining the NWO and beating up the Horsemen. But do you like how that all went down? Because it's one of the greatest promos, really, with Arn Flair legitimately crying in the back. Hennig takes the spot. Then, boom, the week after, Nash makes fun of Arn. Then a few weeks later, a Fall Brawl 97 in War Games, Hennig turns. You're booking-wise, do you love that? Because, man, you're building some heat there. There's no doubt about that.
Well, it was brilliant. It worked out perfectly. Got a lot of heat on the NWO.
Do you think Hennig really could have been or should have been a Horseman longer? Or no, that this was just a storyline device and you were using it for the turn?
Exactly.
When you look at like Hennig here, he's going to be in the NWO, but it's almost like another huge name in the NWO. Like, you already got Hogan, you already got Hall, you already got Nash. Do you think it's almost too many big name heels in the NWO?
It should have been Hogan, Nash, Hall, and Six, and that's it.
It's almost overkill at this point. I mean, it's awesome. I love the turn. I like everything, but it's almost too many guys. It definitely is a bit of overkill with Hennig joining. But, you know, it's just another huge name to add to the roster. Another huge name getting the T-shirt, if you will.
Right, exactly. It should have been those four, the original turn, and then adding Six. It was perfect.
So he wins the U.S. title after he returns on Flair and beats the hell out of him, and NWO wins that War Games. He's going to become the man that made Minnesota famous. He wins the U.S. title defeating Mongo, who's a fellow horseman, the next night. He held the belt for about 3 months, which also included a successful title run against Ric Flair at Halloween Havoc that year and a no DQ match at World War III he retained. He would eventually lose the U.S. title to DDP at Starrcade. The Flair feud kind of stinks.
Okay.
So you don't get to end the Flair feud because Flair has an injury, right? I mean, yeah. Is that basically what happened? Why Flair and him never had a blow off to that feud?
Right. Rick was hurt.
Does that, at booking wise, does that just like kill it though? Because that was going to be a monster feud for you guys, it seemed like, with Flair.
We didn't know how long Rick was going to be out.
And, you know, you're building it up because Hennig beats him at World War III.
Yeah,
and
you got to go a different way. You got to go a different way if you don't know how long a guy's going to be out.
Gotcha.
On TV, now, 6 weeks is a long time.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, too, it's like, okay, you did have so many other guys, obviously, for him to feud with. Anyway, Bret Hart comes in. So, you know what I mean? Rick Rude comes in and joins Hennig and joins NWO. But you got Bret Hart, who then Hennig he kind of feud with in the meantime.
Right.
But I
thought the Flair thing would have been the way to go.
Yes. Would have been awesome, definitely. Yeah. So yeah. He loses to Bret at Uncensored, but he beats British Bulldog at Spring Stampede. But then he gets a knee injury. Then he gets hurt in 98. And it's one of those things where it just keeps happening, right? I mean, he's getting hurt a lot more as far as later on in his career.
Right. And that's because of the bumps he took earlier in his career.
Do you think that you have to, as a booker, treat him differently because the injuries he's got to wrestle less, he's got to work certain guys, or no, you can't book like that?
You can't. You got to get the most out of them as you can because you never know when the injury is going to occur again.
So with him, does end up kind of joining NWO Wolfpack back when you guys did the split, but then of course he turns on them and he joins NWO Hollywood. Too much NWO stuff, right? I mean, you guys are killing the golden goose here.
Yeah. The NWO was no longer the force it was when we kept on adding guys. It was the beginning of the end. That's why I think the bloodline is so good. There's only four of them.
Yep. You got to keep it small. Yeah, you got to keep it. So basically, he would end up feuding with Goldberg for a little bit, too. Goldberg obviously beat him. Is that just a good name for Goldberg to kind of beat and put on the mantle? And obviously, they had the title match at Bash the Beach that year. But that's got to be good for Goldberg, right? Nothing but a plus. He beats a good name, and he probably learns something, too.
Yeah. I mean, he beat one of the greatest workers of all times.
And then, too, eventually after that, then the Horsemen are starting to get a little bit of revenge as Flair and Malenko. And, you know, they're starting to basically reform the team here. And Flair comes back and has that awesome promo with Arn and JJ and all the guys. And they add Malenko to the group. Hennig ends up losing to Malenko. So, I mean, he is kind of putting a lot of guys over as well. Then another knee injury again for Hennig.
Right.
So he's got to take time off. So it's like, he's really catching the injury bug big time in WCW.
Right.
Yeah. I've got to mention, I do, before we wrap this one up, we've got to mention the West Texas Rednecks.
Yeah.
WCW. Whose for idea sure. was that? That was hilarious. That was great.
I think it was Barry Windham's.
Wow. I know he didn't really like it as much, Kurt, but then he got used to it, and then he made it fun. You know, rap is crap, and the great country music. So he eventually made it fun and made it cool. But it's one of those things where you look back and you just chuckle because he's like, okay, I'm a horseman, then I'm an NWO, then I'm a West Texas redneck.
Yeah,
just like funny gimmick for sure.
Yeah, but I wasn't big on Kurt being a funny guy.
Didn't like the comedy aspect of it.
No. He was Mr. Perfect.
It was weird, but it was almost like, okay, thank God he's doing something different. And he made it work. Like, he made it funny.
Oh,
it wasn't like
a
main event thing, but he made it work.
He could make anything work.
Yep.
Yeah.
So basically, he's going to have a little bit more time in WCW. Does not really, you know, he feuds with Sean Stasiak and things, and he was a part of this Powers That Be angle, but nothing really major, nothing great came out of that after that. And obviously TNA and XWF, and he made a return to WWE in 2002. Great appearance at the Royal Rumble, but they didn't really do anything after that. It was almost like he was kind of fading and fading away and fading out of the business, even though he looked like he was in unbelievable shape. And he just, you know, and he's only 44. If you think about it now, so many guys are main eventing at 44. I mean, The Rock is 50s wrestling. Jericho's 50-somethings wrestling. So when it comes to February 10th, 2003, he actually dies in Brandon, Florida, his hotel room. They find him. He's only 44 years old, only a few weeks away from his 45th birthday. So super young to die. He was of acute cocaine intoxication. That's the, you know, the cause of the death. Man, I mean, maybe steroids and painkillers, they said, also could have contributed as well. So, man, what a sad way to go, and only 44 years old for Kurt Hennig.
Yeah, horrible, horrible.
So what's the legacy of Kurt?
One of the greatest workers of all times.
Totally agree. I would say he's nothing but perfect, if you will.
Right, great. That's a great way.
So let's wrap this up. And this one, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Kevin, what do you got going on in this crazy world?
I'm actually giving a seminar tonight at CCW. I'm going up to Philly the week after WrestleMania to do a signing. And then I'm back here in Florida for CCW on the 12th and 13th. So they're getting some steam with CCW, so it's very good.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. See you right back here next week. Have a good one, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.
We loved the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. with guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.